Betwixt the Veil. Retrogression. Tara. Tara had arrived an hour ahead of Gemma to scope out the Buford bar, making certain that there were no plants or any unexpected surprises lying in wait. She sat at one of the fine obsidian wood tables several paces away from the bar with a hot pot of tea, some scones, clotted cream, and raspberry jam. Her computer opened to a document of random writing, setting up the pretense of a journalist or writer whose latest project was approaching tedium. Tara wore her blue pantsuit and glasses while using one of her mundane abilities of looking immaterial and unassuming, a complete contrast to her sister's appearance. Tara was doing her best to not attract attention and wore this outfit due to its unflattering appearance. All in all, her ruse thus far had the effect of her intended desire. Tara absently tapped away on the keyboard while surveilling the greater room as a whole. The bar and the rest of the room was mostly devoid of customers at this hour, and there was a woman in a disheveled blue dress that sat slouching at the bar, looking dejected and clearly inebriated, swaying on her bar stool. Tara wasn't comfortable sitting in a central part of the room where she could not see it in its entirety, but with some subtle movements of her head, she could peripherally observe the blind spots. The only other patrons present were a couple several tables behind her, quietly engrossed in an argument about some trivial matter whose dysfunction was known only to them. Tara had never really understood long-term relationships, perhaps due to the nature of her work, but mostly because she felt them to be a waste of time. While she enjoyed the benefits of sexual intercourse, she found most of the trappings that came with relationships were a hindrance to an individual's happiness. Tara also viewed relationships to be ridiculous, with most people choosing partners as a crutch for their own lack of personal integrity and self-confidence. Not to say all relationships turn out this way, but from her observation and experience, this was often the case. When it came to marriage, its archaic traditions and ceremonial functions of bondage, she just laughed at its ridiculous invalidity. With divorce and infidelity running rampant, Tara was uncertain why people would even bother getting married. Sure, there's falling in love and all of that, but why create unneeded expectations that are not communicated, left long in sufferance, only to fester like an infected wound, corroding trust until all that remains is bitter words and shattered dreams? All of this hidden in the guise of eternal love and commitment. What absolute rubbish, Tara thought, for she felt humanity was not meant to be monogamous, but had been forced into it over the millennia in order to survive. All the same, she turned her attention to the present and gazed about the room, taking in her surroundings. From what she could gather, all seemed to be as it should, and no one was overtly paying her any heed. As the evening progressed, the room began to quickly fill as dinner approached. Tara's previous companions, the couple, left with a disgruntled compromise lingering on their lips, and the drunken woman at the end of the bar was cut off and escorted to her room. She now sat with a fresh pot of tea and several new patrons sitting at tables scattered throughout the room. There was one particular man that drew her eye. He sat by himself in the corner and was mostly withdrawn. Tara occasionally caught him casually glancing past her, looking towards the bar or dining hall as if in expectation of something or someone, almost like a man nervously awaiting a date that would likely never arrive. She felt as though his eyes were lingering on her as his gaze meandered about the room. He wore a mundane brown suit and tie, hair of a similar hue, and a bowl cut and eyes that were demure, but flashed with hidden intelligence. His face, height, and build were average. Tara was unlikely to have noticed him in most other situations, but tonight she was on high alert. She took mental note of his presence, but did not feel alarmed, nor the need to call things off. There was only one other man of note sitting close by and reading a book, but he never glanced up and seemed content with its voluminous pages. Her senses told her he was of no great concern, yet she couldn't help feeling uneasy and somewhat disconcerted. To say Tara was disquieted by the entire situation and lack of preparation would be an understatement, but Reggie and Gemma had assured her that things would run smoothly. Yet after the life she had lived, she knew nothing was ever a sure thing. It was at that moment that Gemma entered the room, drawing the attention of many, their eyes following as she took her place at the bar. Her sister did look stunning in her dress, portraying her role exceedingly well. Not too long after Gemma took her place at the bar, their Mark arrived, again drawing the eyes of many in the room, but with a more palpable pull. It was odd, but Tara felt something familiar about that pull, something that nagged in the back of her mind. Tara glanced around the room again as Mr. Jennings made his way to the bar, but as before, nothing appeared out of place. All the same, the familiar feeling danced around the back of her senses, but when she tried to focus on it, her thoughts scattered like sand in the wind. She inwardly shook herself and focused her senses on the task at hand. To uphold her ruse, she spent some time writing on her computer, mostly typing down stray thoughts about her unease and inattentiveness. The evening progressed, and Gemma left the bar with her Mark and made her way into the dining room. Time shuffled forward with many people coming and going from the bar area, yet the two men she had made note of earlier remained. Waiters would refresh their drinks and bring them food, but other than to visit the latrine, they mostly kept to themselves. The one closest to her continued to innocuously read his book, frequently turning its pages. Meanwhile, the man in the brown suit in the far corner had ceased his longing looks, pulled out a laptop, and appeared engrossed with the contents of its screen. On one of her several visits to the bathroom, Tara snuck a glance at what he was working on. As she did, the scent of sandalwood gently drifted into her nostrils, but she was only able to glimpse what looked to be pictures of old stone circles and close-ups of seemingly ancient writings. She looked away quickly, concerned she may draw attention to herself, but Tara could tell she was in the clear. Finally, Gemma returned, passing through the doorway that led into the hall, her shadow cloak obfuscating her presence. Most who would look in Gemma's direction would find their gaze quickly sliding from her without registering her presence. Acting as a visual deterrent, her shadow cloak prevented anyone from intently focusing on her. She moved like a whisper of a memory, inefficacious and quickly forgotten. Tara was able to see beyond the illusion and watched her approach, maintaining her casual demeanor and keeping her eyes affixed to the screen in front of her. From the far corner of the room, she saw the man in the brown suit and glasses making his way towards her table, likely en route to the bathroom. Tara cursed inwardly as she realized the man was on a collision course with Gemma. Tara tensed, eyes momentarily widening as her breath came to a stop. At the last minute, Gemma sidestepped, stumbling in front of her as she smoothly placed a glass on the table while simultaneously sliding the thumb drive under her napkin. Tara couldn't help but admire her sister's quick use of distraction, but spared no time in covertly using her innate earth powers to absorb organic matter from the exterior of the glass and manipulate its shape. Tara used her magic to mimic the fingerprints on the glass, like a magical layer of skin, making her thumbprint an exact replica of Mr. Jennings. She crossed her legs, hiding the open case, and deftly used her napkin to obscure the drive as she inserted it into the computer. As she ran the prepared program for upload, Tara looked up and spotted Gemma on her way to the bar, where she removed her shadow cloak and began interacting with the bartender. Using all of her senses and peripheral vision, she scanned the room, making certain no one had observed her subtle movements. Tara quickly hid the upload window and continued typing away, not fully paying heed to the words as they flowed onto the screen. Minutes later, as she noticed Gemma getting antsy, the computer chimed, letting her know the upload was complete. With the skill of well-practiced sleight of hand, she palmed the thumb drive smoothly back into its case, concealing it in her napkin, and placed it on the edge of the table. She then gave the predetermined signal, uncrossing her legs and tapping her ear while concentrating on the computer screen. With deliberate grace, Gemma moved away from the bar, resuming her shadow cloak. As she approached, Tara sensed a swell of mana building in her proximity, but could not place its source. Just as Gemma passed and snatched up the case, there was a surge of energy that briefly rippled in the ether, disrupting Gemma's magic. Her fluid recovery displayed the caliber of her skill as Gemma smoothly moved forward as if nothing was amiss, her cloak once again secure. Tara nonchalantly gazed around her, trying to discover what had caused the anomaly, but it appeared nothing was amiss. All the patrons of the Buford Bar were absorbed in their own interests, and seemingly no one had noticed Gemma's passing. The gentleman in the brown suit was the only one to move, but he just paid his bill and left the bar. Tara, feeling relieved, thinking it was likely due to Gemma's novice skill with the shadow cloak that caused the disruption. So, she went back to her casual typing and checking of her phone for another 20 minutes, to be sure she did not need to enact one of their contingency plans. Tara gathered her belongings, paid her tab, and made her way outside. The moment she exited the building, it was as if a subtle weight slid from her consciousness, like someone had removed silken spiderwebs that had ensnared her mind. Tara wrote it off as relief to have made it this far into their plan with no perceived complications. Well, none other than that of the anomaly that had occurred as Gemma passed her table in the Buford Bar. Now that she thought about it, the mana flux and disturbance of Gemma's cloak was likely more than an anomaly. As she made her way down Carding Lane across Savoy Place to her standby location at the Robert Reich statue, she had a feeling that she was being followed. It wasn't overt, but the tickle of phantom tendrils across her awareness alerted her to the presence of another. Acting oblivious to her perceived pursuer, she made her way past the statue, took a left, and sat at one of the wooden benches. Placing her computer case next to her, she cast out her senses and gazed into her surroundings. She did not have the same depth of magical awareness as her sister, but Tara could see very well in the dark, had acutely attuned hearing, and a superb sense of smell. The only thing she noticed was a couple holding hands and speaking softly to one another as they walked down the path in front of her. A few rowdy men back down the road she had come from were making a ruckus, likely returning home from the pubs, smelling of ale and cheap cologne. Then a familiar scent drifted in on the breeze as she glimpsed the silhouette of a figure lurking in the shadows of one of the nearby trees. The scent of sandalwood. Using her peripheral vision, she observed the figure as it detached itself from the shadows, peered about as if making certain it wasn't seen by others, and silently approached. Tara did not turn to look directly at her aberrant companion, allowing him to slip around behind and settle into the large bench next to her. His manner of approach was suspicious, but Tara had the feeling he had made his presence known. Casually, she shifted her gaze, settling it on the now intelligent brown eyes staring back at her, all semblance of his demure persona gone. He placed his suitcase next to Tara's computer on the bench between them. A moment of unease hung in the air, like the tension of a steel wire intensely vibrating just before it snaps. The man tilted his head slightly, as if considering her, then spoke urgently with a warm, deep American accent that twanged with notes of Savannah, Georgia.
"I never intended to introduce myself in this manner, but I believe you and your sister are in dire peril."
Tara stiffened in her seat, startled. She placed her hand on the computer case and adopted a defensive posture. The man, noticing her reaction, put his hands up to assuage her of any hostile intent and said, "My name's Jasper Abernathy. I don't mean you any grief. Unfortunately, other than my name, I don't have the time to explain who I am, why I'm here, or how I know who you are and your dealings. But believe me when I say you need to call off this evening's undertaking." Tara sat there, startled by the man's utterance. But there was something to his kind eyes, calm demeanor, and tone that conveyed truth. Yet she still couldn't help feeling wary. After all, this man had just come creeping out of the shadows to approach her and had been apparently secretly observing her all day. "Unfortunately, I believe your operations this evening within the Savoy have been compromised by Mr. Jennings' agents. I'm still uncertain as to how they were capable of disrupting your sister's magic, but both of you need to quickly withdraw and get somewhere safe. His agents are convening on our location as we speak." Jasper uneasily glanced about. "I likely should have never approached you. We are forbidden to directly interfere, but my conscience would not let me rest otherwise," he said with grievous tension in his voice. Jasper stood up slowly, grabbing his suitcase as he made to leave. Tara felt overwhelmed by the onslaught of information and had so many questions tumbling around in her head, wondering if she should even trust this man. Tara did not have the ability to use true sight, but there was something about his presence and actions that rang true. So with the urgency of the situation, she asked only one thing. "How much time?" Jasper turned back towards her and said, "Less than a minute, I reckon." With that, he swiftly strode off towards the river, disappearing into the shifting, shadowy constructs of the night. Tara knew she didn't have time to make an escape, so she quickly pulled out her phone and texted Gemma to abort. She then used her magic to convert all of the phone's matter back to its base elements and then tossed what remained into the nearby trash. She prayed to her ancestors that Gemma would see her text before it was too late. Just as Tara was preparing to destroy the computer, she sensed the arrival of the aforementioned agents. There were three, discreetly dressed in street clothes and ranging in height from short to tall and overtly conspicuous. The years of training and her acute senses told her these men were dangerous, just by the way they carried themselves. In the scant lighting that filtered through the branches of the trees, Tara could make out the faint bulges in their jackets, confirming they were armed. They walked closer to the Robert Reich statue, catching sight of her at the park bench. Tara quickly snapped the clasp of the computer case closed and slung it over her shoulder, getting ready to casually walk in the opposite direction of the three men. As she turned to leave, she came face to face with another familiar visage. It was the man who had been sitting at the table quietly reading his book, who now stood staring at Tara with truculent intent. Tara cursed inwardly, wondering just how he had gotten so close without her sensing him, and how he had been able to disrupt Gemma's magic. Tara had no doubt that is exactly what had happened in the Beaufort bar when Gemma's shadow cloak had shimmered for that brief moment. This wasn't the time for questions or personal beratement, so Tara took that moment to prepare for combat. Calling her earth magic forth, she pulled the mana up from the ground into herself, strengthening her body, increasing her agility and reflexes. The magic coursed through her body like water through the roots of a tree. Tara's senses flared, fracturing that second into many moments. She could feel the heartbeats of the four men surrounding her increase as they prepared to strike. She could smell the rich scent of moss, soil, and foliage from the nearby park, as well as the dusky scent of the asphalt streets. She could feel the vibrance of the trees and shrubberies as they sang of the life coursing through them, despite their slumbering stasis. She could feel the rush of the Thames River flowing, pulsing and surging like an artery through the city, echoing its longing for the sea. Tara deeply drew on the mana, allowing the energy to flow into her, becoming the conduit for its release. Those fractured moments coalesced into the present as the man in front of her lunged forward, grabbing for the computer case that hung from Tara's shoulder. She sidestepped his advance, using her momentum to sling the computer around her body, colliding it with the back of the man's head. The computer audibly cracked, severely damaging the internal electronics. The man cursed as he staggered to his knees, hands instinctively covering his head. Confirming he had been sufficiently stunned by the blow, Tara came about, facing the four men. The three that had been behind her rushed forward with trained precision. The first to arrive was the shortest of the three, with a long beard and stocky features. He pulled out a telescoping baton as he advanced. Tara heard its segments snap into place as he swung it towards her head. She deftly dodged the strike while moving inside his guard and brought her elbow up into the shelf of his jaw. His teeth snapped shut with a grunt as the man fell backwards, dropping the baton in his descent. Tara swiftly spun, snatching the baton out of the air and bringing it about as the other two men closed in on her. In a simultaneous movement, she slammed it into the lanky man's ribs and heard a satisfying crack, causing him to stagger into the mid-sized man on his approach. The two collided for a moment, but expertly separated, then stood warily on guard. Tara breathed easily, stepped back, tossed the computer on the bench she had just vacated, then reassessed her assailants. The tall man clutched at his side where she had struck him and was breathing unevenly, his ribs broken or fractured. The first man she had struck got back to his feet and stumbled off to her right. He glared at her with hatred. A faint hint of wariness glinted in his eyes. Meanwhile, the stocky man who had attacked her with the baton was groaning as he quickly but unsteadily made his way to his feet. Tara knew she could likely leg it out of there, but the loyalty for her sister kept her rooted, knowing that Gemma's safety may depend on Tara quickly concluding this confrontation. In that moment, the wind gusted, swirling debris around Tara and blowing loose strands of her hair about her face like dark streamers. The pale light from the streets cast her face in a haunting glow. Smiling and drawing the wind to her, she beckoned the four forward. The men were spread out in a crescent, angling away from the statue behind them. The man who had yet to receive any of Tara's wrath was the first to move. He advanced, snapping out a kick for Tara's legs. She danced back, easily dodging his attack. She could tell he was testing her. The wind built up around her, wrapping around her arms like tight tendrils from an unwoven tapestry. Fearful in the face of such power, the first man she had struck wasn't advancing, but frantically fiddling with something on his wrist. Tara didn't have time to consider his actions, for the other three approached her in precise synchronicity. The tall man lashed out with a roundhouse kick to her head as the short, stocky man threw out a haymaker to her opposite side. The third man, sensing Tara's intentions, stopped in mid-strike and spun off to her right. Before the two men's blows could land, she cast out her strands of air like the tentacles of a kraken, wrapping them around the limbs of each man, ensnaring them in a torrent of air and tossing them like unwanted debris into the statue behind them with an audible crack. The third tentacle she pulled back to herself as she noticed the remaining man had disengaged. As she reshaped the flow around the baton, preparing to strike the third man, there was a sudden shudder in the ether, like the shuttle of a loom being snatched mid-weave. All the strands of her magic unraveling, like a thread pulled from a tapestry. It was as if all vitality was suddenly sucked from her, draining her of all magic, like a brilliant canvas being sapped of color or a blazing fire being snuffed out. the ashes being the only memory. The wind ceased to obey her commands, and her fortified body weakened under the oppression of an unknown force. All of her heightened senses and awareness dulled as if all vibrance in the world had been drained from her. She dropped to her knees as both the literal and figurative wind had been knocked from her. The baton slipped from her now cold fingers, clattering to the ground like a forgotten memory, resounding with the dull echo of her defeat. Tara's head swam as she vaguely noticed the third man pick up the baton, move behind her, then a dull pain flared in her head, followed by blackness. As Tara lay unconscious on the cold concrete, the four men gathered themselves with professional dignity. Relieved that their quarry was subdued, they took a moment to breathe, muttering amongst themselves of how feisty she was, and then properly secured Tara's hands and feet with oversized zip ties. Fortunately, their combat, although rough and fantastical, had been reasonably brief and had not attracted undue attention. There were a few curious onlookers that had been drawn by the sounds of the confrontation, yet none had witnessed the more magical aspects. Most punters don't generally want to get involved with such matters, so they were easily deterred by the flashing of fake badges and brisk words, assuring them that all was in hand. One of Tara's assailants was sent back to the Savoy to retrieve a wheelchair, a blanket, and a hat. He returned promptly, followed by the waddling presence of Gerald the butler. He placed Tara and her computer in the wheelchair, tucking the blanket around her so her bonds were concealed, and finishing the disguise with a red woman's long-brimmed derby hat that covered her face and blood-stained head. With Tara disguised in such a fashion, the five men made their way back to the Savoy. Gerald took the lead, pushing Tara along as if she were an old woman returning from a brisk outing for a breath of fresh air. The other four men lingered behind so as to not draw too much attention to the figure in the wheelchair. They made it back into the hotel, up the elevator to the fifth floor, where they approached room 502 and stopped at what appeared to be a blank space in the wall. The short, stocky man with a graying ginger beard peered about, grinning conspiratorially. Feeling satisfied no one was approaching, he withdrew a small golden key engraved with runic symbols. It began to glimmer as he drew it close to the blank wall. As the key neared, lines of blue and gold sprung forth as if an invisible hand traced out the lines of an ornate, glowing door and small keyhole.